Blog Talk Radio.
Doing today? I got a lot of substance in today's show. Needless to say, there's going to be a lot about Iran. But before I get to that, I will do a document dump of facts on you, and it's a great article in Raw Story detailing just how screwed up the world economy is, and the U.S. economy is, in terms of wealth distribution. I love the way they structured this article, because it wasn't even really an article. It was just, like I said, like a fact dump. Like, they just bullet-pointed everything. That's really a secular talk style of them. I don't know if I've spoken about that on air before, but I'm actually a shitty writer. Because I'm not, like, I only know how to, organize thoughts in a talking fashion. So if, when you write it down on paper, it doesn't flow. It looks clunky. Like, I could talk it and it sounds normal, but when I write it, it just doesn't translate well because it's like choppy writing, I guess you could say. So that's why I've always been a big fan of the bullet points. In fact, I always, like, wonder why more news articles aren't done in that format, where it's just like, all right, here are your relevant facts. There's five bullet points. Boom, 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 boom. There you have it. Well, Raw Story kind of took that advice, and I think they got it from Alternet, too, so we'll kick it off with that in just a second. I also have some sad stories, some unfortunate stuff about killing of witches. Every time, I mean, my heart breaks a little more every time I see a story like that, because it's not real! It's not fucking real, and you're taking somebody's life. I mean, that's the height of immorality. Like I said, a lot on the Iran deal, President Obama goes after a CBS News reporter, and I like this Obama. I like the Obama that hears some dumb shit and goes, excuse you? You should be embarrassed. He said something along those lines. He wasn't that harsh, but it was something along the lines of, you should be embarrassed for asking that question. Yes, keep hitting him, Obama. I like it. And I'll give you one more tease here, what you have to look forward to. Oh, God, how did I forget that? How did I not bring this up yet? Pastor Manning is going to tell us about the demon semen juice and the sperm and whatnot. Zip, zop, zoop-a-da-bop. Apparently he's half Bill Cosby from that voice, from that impression. God, you're really going to love that story. Anytime you have Pastor Manning talking about sex fluids, it's guaranteed to be comedy. Okay, let's get started. Like I said, we'll kick it off with a great economic story that really is detailed. There's a great article out today in Raw Story which bullet points over 30 incredible facts about the economy and wealth, and I wanted to share a bunch of them with you so you get a picture of just how messed up the world economy is, and of course the U.S. economy is, but as you'll see here, it's really the overall system. You can't isolate it to any one particular country. We have a tremendous issue with wealth distribution all around the world. So I'll give you some right here. They say the amount of money that was given out in bonuses on Wall Street last year is twice the amount all minimum wage workers earned in the country combined. Now, whenever you bring something up like that, I always feel like I want to add the caveat and let everybody know, I'm not the kind of person who would advocate for everybody making the exact same amount of money, no matter what you do. I have no problem with the janitor or, you know, somebody who's doing an entry-level kind of thing making significantly less money than the CEO or than the person running the company. There are certain jobs come with much more responsibility, and they're harder to do, and they demand a higher percentage share of the market. We understand that. You can be more productive in one job and not as much in another job. I think we all get that. I think the overwhelming majority of people all around the world say, yeah, we get it. Not everybody's going to make exactly the same. But when you hear a fact like that, you go, okay, wow, now the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction. That they said the amount of money that was given out in bonuses alone on Wall Street, so not even their salaries, in bonuses alone, is twice the amount that all minimum wage workers earned in the country combined. Oh, that's insane. All right, let's continue. You've heard this one before. The wealthiest 85 people on the planet have more money than the poorest 3.5 billion combined. 85 people, as they said in the original study, you could fit that number of people on one of those double-decker buses. So the number of people that could fit on one of those buses has more money than half the world combined, 3.5 billion. Again, I'm fine with some level of income inequality, but when you get to that level, it's not like the people in the bus actually worked harder. It's not like those 85 people just worked that much harder than everybody else in the world, than half the fucking world combined. It's not possible. It's not possible for one human being to be that much more productive. What we're looking at is a situation where the system is rigged when it gets to that extreme level of inequality. And a lot of this has to do, as you guys know already, with inheritance. So if you happen to be in the good sperm club, you know, you're the son or daughter of somebody who's already worth $5 billion, you know that you don't have to do shit the rest of your life, and you know you're going to get a tremendous amount of money. And this is exactly why you need a system that, yes, redistributes wealth. All right, let me give you some more here. The poorest half of the Earth's population owns 1% of the Earth's wealth. The richest 1% of the Earth's population owns 46% of the Earth's wealth. I don't know, if you took aliens and brought them here and showed them that that's the way the system works and that's how we divvied up the money, they would say, oh, so you're like a primitive kind of animal. They wouldn't look at that and say, oh, I'm sure there's some sort of reasonable, rational explanation. I'm sure there is. Oh, that group of people must have worked so much harder than the rest of them. No, they look at that and say, oh, you're stupid people. Okay, so you're still trying to, you know, work out how to do the system properly. I mean, when I look at numbers like that, I think, oh, we're really not that much more evolved than monkeys. All right, let me give you more. They say, the slice of the national income pie going to the wealthiest 1% of Americans has doubled since 1979. The 1% also takes home 20% of the income. This figure is the most since the 1920s era of laissez-faire government. And, of course, that led to the Great Depression, the stock market crash and the Great Depression. So we know from the golden age of economic expansion in America that the system functions better when the top 1% only makes between 8% and 12% of the nation's income. Again, that's a huge level of inequality, but it's bearable. But we always have a crash that comes when the top 1% is making like over 20% of the nation's income, because there's only crumbs left for everybody else, and they can't afford to buy the goods that the so-called captains of industry are making. Top 1% of America owns 50% of investment assets, so stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, and the poorest half of America owns just 0.5% of the investments. So, you know how I always tell you guys, hey, when you look at a stock market, bear in mind that that's really not a good indicator of the health of the economy overall. That's really just a good indicator of how the rich are doing. Well, that's true. So when you have, you know, pundits on TV who bend over backwards and go crazy to accommodate the stock market and to talk about the ups and downs of the stock market, just know that's not like they care about how the construction worker or the accountant is doing and how much money they're making. It's not an indicator of how the middle class is doing. It's an indicator of how the rich are doing. All right, they say CEOs in 1965 earned about 24 times the amount of the average worker. In 1980, they earned 42 times as much, and today, CEOs earn 325 times the average worker, and by the way, that number is continuing to increase. There's a bigger and bigger difference as time goes by here, And again, man, I'm going to keep coming back to the same point and stressing it, because people try to caricature the left and act like, you know, we want some sort of a system where everything is divided up equally and everything is publicly owned, everything is the government. That's not true. If you actually listen to people on the left, they'll tell you, we're fine with a certain level of inequality. That ratio of, you know, CEOs make 24 times what the average worker makes. I think that's a little too much, because I don't know if it's possible that any one human being really is 24 times as productive or works 24 times as hard. So maybe that's a little too much, but I would say 12 to 1, 15 to 1. I could see an argument for that, that the CEO makes 15 times the average worker. It's a lot, but maybe there's an argument for that. But when you get into the level of like 100 times, 200 times, 325 times, which is what it is right now, there is no argument for that. I'm not interested in hearing your bullshit argument for that. They also say, I'll give you a few more here. In 1946, a child born into poverty had about a 50% chance of scaling the income ladder into the middle class. So this is the idea of the American dream. In 1980, the chances were 40%. Okay, so it dropped a little bit. A child born today has about a 33% chance. So the American dream is dying. That's a fact. This is statistics we're talking about here. This stuff is measurable. We know. So the American dream is falling away because our political system and our economic system is so fucked up. Over 20% of all American children live below the poverty line. The rate is higher than almost all other developed countries. And finally, they say, in 1970, there were 5 registered lobbyists working on behalf of wealthy corporations for every one of the 535 members of Congress. Today, there are 22 lobbyists per congressperson. So that fact kind of ties everything up together, because at least in the United States, when you talk about the income inequality getting worse, it is directly tied to the fact that in the late 1970s, early 1980s, the Supreme Court ruled that money equals free speech, and it allowed essentially unlimited money to be spent in the political system with some limits, but they were more show than anything else. And right when that happened, you saw the influx of corporate influence, billionaires' influence. Like I just said, the number of lobbyists went up tremendously. And then what you had is a government that minorly represented the people, like to some degree they represented the people, maybe not a lot, but a little bit. A government like that became a government that just ignores the people completely. And we're pretty clearly an oligarchy or a kleptocracy. You have government of, by, and for the rich, of, by, and for the ruling class. Or you could say it's a corporatocracy, government of, by, and for the corporations. But what we know for sure is they're not listening to the people, and that's one of the main reasons why we have such horrendous income inequality in America. And if you look at the world over, of course, there's a variety of different reasons why they have and why most people have high levels of income inequality. But the reality is we need to fix it. We can argue all day long about the causes of it and the root of it and exactly how, specifically what ways we can fix it, okay, but we know that we have to fix it, and it should all start with our own individual governments, and we should try to push them in the right direction to do the right policy changes. Okay, now, let's move on here to the Senate torture report. Got an update on this for you. So with the release of the Senate torture report, we learned that the Bush administration got the backing of experts to greenlight their crimes. And now the American Psychological Association has apologized for taking part in that and essentially greenlighting it. So NPR reports the following, quote, "The apology comes in response to an independent report commissioned by the APA itself. The 542-page report found evidence that top officials of the association had colluded with government officials. The goal of the collusion was to ensure that APA ethics policies were consistent with Bush administration policies on interrogation techniques. Those policies allowed waterboarding, sleep deprivation, and sexual humiliation, practices the APA now specifically condemns, and according to the New York Times, the CIA's own health professionals criticized the interrogation practices, but they were rebuffed by the outside psychologists." So So that's an amazing fact. Think about what they just told us here. They're saying that there were people inside the CIA, their own psychological experts, who said, I don't know how this is even debatable. Yeah, you totally should not torture. And then the Bush administration did the old Bush administration trick of, yeah, that's nice. You disagree with us, step aside. We're going to find somebody who does agree with us, even if we have to find it through corrupt means or bribe them or do anything to try to get anybody at the APA to say, I green light that. So their own experts, the Bush administration's own experts, said, stop, this is not okay. We're not approving this. And Bush said, great, but you can move aside because we have the American Psychological Association here willing to back us up. And think about how corrupt, how little moral fiber these so-called experts had at the APA. Because it's not like they came in and said, no, you don't get it. What you're doing is wrong. The other psychologists were right. This isn't debatable. They said, what do you need us to do? Do you need us to bend our own ethical standards and our own opinions on what practices are okay in order to suit your narrative so you could do whatever you want? Yes, we cannot wait to do that. And let's keep in mind here that when this story first broke, we covered it at the time, and people got, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, simply to stand there and say to the Bush administration and say to the people doing the torturing, I'm an expert and this is okay. Now, I know people hate it when you make this comparison, but it's true, so you have to bring it up. The fuck do you think the Nazis did, man? They had their own experts that they brought in and said, oh, this is for the regime? This is for the good of the country? Well, then, yeah, I mean, of course it can be justified. I'm an expert. I say it can be justified. Again, people say, Godwin's law, oh, you brought up the Nazis. Anybody who brings up the Nazis is automatically wrong. But in this case, it is a perfect explanation and a perfect analogy. And it's not hyperbole at all. Nazis tortured people. The CIA tortured people. There's nothing that makes our torture morally superior. The action in and of itself is wrong. You know, well, we were torturing because we believe in civil liberties, but torturing by definition is a violation of civil liberties. So it's like saying I'm going to murder somebody because I'm against murder. That doesn't make any sense. I'm for civil liberties, so I'm going to take away civil liberties. That doesn't make any sense. And by the way, at the same time they're doing this, the NSA was also violating civil liberties in other ways by spying on everybody. We took away due process and habeas corpus. Again, violations of civil liberties. Protection from cruel and unusual punishment. That's out the window because, again, that's exactly what went on here when it came to torturing. So there's nothing that makes our torture better. The American Psychological Association does something like this. It's not like because they had name recognition that was positive, where you brought them up and people said, oh, serious organization. It doesn't mean that they're going to stay like that forever, and that by definition, whenever you bring them up, everybody's got to go, oh, I bow my head in deference because they must be right. No, now we know, in many ways, they're a ridiculous organization. You green-lighted torture and then expected us to take you seriously? Now I'm going to look at everything you fucking come out with a fine-tooth comb. And let's be clear, they did not punish or fire those people. So you're gonna write a report, oh yeah, this is totally wrong, we're totally against this. Anyway, let's move on here, nothing to see. No, but you're going to condemn it, and then you're going to not actually take action. And I don't even think that's enough. Not only should these people be fired, and should they be excommunicated from being in this field any longer, they should be brought up on charges. Of course they should be brought up on charges. Again, if we saw any other country acting this way, do you think we would allow them to have a debate about it? There's a psychological association in Iran that greenlights that regime's torture. Would we say, well, they are an official psychological association, so we got to respect what they say? No, we'd be like, what a sham fucking group that shills for the government, and they're bullshitters. And of course they should be brought to justice. If you greenlight torture, you're a criminal. Same thing here, man. What I'm trying to get through people's thick heads is just because we do it doesn't mean it's better. I mean, that's the kind of logic of, like, you know, kids who get into a fight with each other, and then mommy comes along and has to tell them to stop fighting, but one of the kids is convinced, no, when I punch my brother, it's okay when I punch my brother because I did it. But when my brother punches me, I'm going to cry and I'm going to bitch and I'm going to scream and I'm going to moan and I'm going to say, Mommy, how evil is wrong. If something is, insofar as something is illegal and it makes sense that it's illegal, insofar as something is immoral, it's immoral across the board. You don't get to then nitpick and say, well, it's slightly less immoral if this group does it because they have blonde hair and blue eyes. No, that doesn't make any sense. If anything, that shows your own lack of moral fiber and your own lack of moral character and your own lack of objectivity because you've bought into the reductive, tribalistic, nonsense view of the world. And that tribalistic view is, when we do it, it must be okay because we did it. And we mean well, so it's got to be okay, but when they do it, it's wrong. No, it's not okay when anybody does it. If you oppose it when other people do it, you absolutely should oppose it when your government does it. And if anything, you should be louder when your government does it, because it's your fucking tax dollars that are going towards that. You're going to sit around while that happens? That makes you look bad. If you're silent, some people will view that as you're complicit in it. So you got to speak out against it, and you got to say, no, not on my watch, man. And the APA should fire anybody who is associated with that. Of course, there should be charges pressed against them, but I'm not going to hold my fucking breath for that. And, I mean, the American Psychological Association, they ruin their name, and they should at least acknowledge the fact that, you know, you've become this joke now. Your name doesn't carry the same weight as it used to because you just took part in a gigantic war crime. That's not something we just get past. That's not something we just get over. So you tarnished your own reputation, and you guys have nobody to blame but yourself for that. Okay. Let me do one more here, and then we'll take a break. President Obama decided to go after a CBS News reporter, Major Garrett, because he asked a question on Iran and the Iranian nuclear deal that Obama found a little bit ridiculous. Check it out.
Thank you, Mr. President. As you well know, there are 4 Americans in Iran, 3 held on trumped-up charges, according to your administration, and 1 whereabouts unknown. Can you tell the country, sir, why you are content with all the fanfare around this deal to leave the conscience of this nation and the strength of this nation unaccounted for in relation to these 4 Americans? And last week, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said under no circumstances should there be any relief for Iran in terms of ballistic missiles or conventional weapons. It is perceived that that was a last-minute capitulation in these negotiations. Many in the Pentagon feel you've left the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff hung out to dry. Could you comment?
I got to give you credit, Major, for how you craft those questions. For the notion that I'm content as I celebrate with American citizens languishing in Iranian jails? Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better. I've met with the families of some of those folks. Nobody's content, and our diplomats and our teams are working diligently to try to get them out. Now, if the question is why we did not tie the negotiations to their release, think about the logic that creates. Suddenly Iran realizes, you know what, maybe we can get additional concessions out of the Americans by holding these individuals. It makes it much more difficult for us to walk away if Iran somehow thinks that a nuclear deal is dependent in some fashion on the nuclear deal. And by the way, if we had walked away from the nuclear deal, we'd still be pushing them just as hard to get these folks out. That's why those issues are not connected, but we are working every single day to try to get them out.
Yeah, I like it. I like that, Obama. I wish that Obama was around from day one, but that Obama wasn't around from day one. You know what immediately popped in my head when I heard him talking like this? When he got the PolitiFact lie of the year, because he said, well, if you like your healthcare plan, you can keep it. And then, of course, that wasn't technically true, so the media hammered him, you know, mercilessly. And his response wasn't similar to this kind of response, where he's like, how dare you, you're wrong, and I'll tell you exactly why you're wrong. He didn't do that. He walked on eggshells back then. And, by the way, the answer back then was, yeah, you couldn't keep your plan because it got better. The worst of the worst of the worst plans that rip people off, you had to pay money to get basically no coverage, those plans were gone, and oftentimes they were replaced by plans where you paid less and got better coverage. So you can thank me, because if anything, it was a lie that actually helped you. The end result was better than what was there before. But what, you want to argue for the right to pay more and get worse coverage? How dumb are you? That's what the response should have been. He didn't say that back then, of course. But now he's getting closer to that kind of an attitude. And I like it, man. Obama has done many things better in the second term. Keep everything in perspective, though. There's the TPP, which is the worst thing that he's done, and he's pushing that hard now. So he's still a mixed character. He's still pro-establishment, pro-corporatist. He's still, at best, center-left, but in reality more like center or center-right. And that's on the U.S. political spectrum, which is skewed and way off to the right anyway compared to the international spectrum. But, okay, look at his response there. He's like, you're implying that I'm content with Americans being in Iranian prisons. Are you dense? Are you dumb? I'm the president of the United States of America. Seriously? Of course I'm against them being in prison, and of course we're working on it, you idiot! You idiot! And also, what do you think is happening behind the scenes, jackass? When you make a deal like this, guess what? Both sides are happier. Both sides like each other a little bit more. And then when that happens, you open the door to what? Further talks. Further negotiations. Further progress. You're making it much more likely that you're going to get those people out of prison. If you didn't do the deal, it would be much less likely that you're going to get them out of prison. They're continuing to work on it. You know, it reminded me of the thing George Bush said, except when he said it was dumb because it was about gas prices. He's like, if I had a magic wand, I'd say drop prices. Well, to bring up the magic wand again, obviously if Obama had a magic wand, he'd say, get them out of jail. If you could press a button and get them out, boom, you get them out. That's not the way the world works. You have to actually try to achieve it and be intelligent in how you achieve it, and sometimes you don't get immediate results. They're absolutely working on it, and I'm sure it's a top priority, which is why Obama was offended by the question. This implication that now everything is all rosy and there's no problems and we don't care about the Americans in Iranian jail. That's ridiculous. And then also, let me add this. Obama didn't say this, but I'll say it. To the people who are like, you know, flipping out about the fact that in 5 years they can now buy conventional weapons and in 8 years they'll be able to buy ballistic missiles. Number one, as Obama goes on to point out, dude, that's 5 years away and 8 years away. They still can't get it. Calm the fuck down. But number two, even if they were allowed to get it right now, you want to know why they're able to get it and why it actually makes sense for them to be able to get it? ISIS! ISIS! A bunch of jackasses who don't know anything about the Middle East think ISIS and Iran are working together. They think they're on the same page. So then they fearmonger, like, oh my God, Obama basically just gave al-Baghdadi weapons and ballistic missiles. But he didn't. He's giving the people who are fighting al-Baghdadi and ISIS weapons. The biggest bulwark against ISIS in the region is the Shia militias. And it's not like Obama's saying, let's us arm them, let's proactively arm them ourselves. He's just saying in 5 years and in 8 years, we will lift the ban on them partaking in the international conventional weapons marketplace. That makes perfect sense, man. But in the PC environment in America, when it comes to foreign policy, you're not allowed to say anything that makes sense about Iran, because then it might be perceived as, you know, you're pro-Iranian theocracy. No, you can be 100% against Iranian theocracy, 100% against the various abuses of their government, which are many, but still keep things in perspective and understand that they're definitely the lesser evil in the region, and they're going to fight ISIS, and you want them to fight ISIS. So it makes sense to add that provision to say, yeah, they could have conventional weapons. They're fighting our biggest enemy in the region. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, I got a lot more on the Iran deal. You're not going to want to miss it. Dick Cheney weighs in, Glenn Beck weighs in, so the peanut gallery. And then later on, pass the man in, talks about the devil semen. All right, stay right there.
Girl, you got me shook. I be After all of the fighting and the screams, there's the trees and the jive and the rain, going back, it's raining. Why did you call? I don't know how long it took, but I know that I drove all around trying to calm it down. Wouldn't answer my call. Scared girl, it's cold. Damn girl, what you feel like that? Whatever I said, I didn't mean it like that. Yeah. How do you expect from me not to fight back when you scream like that? Girl, I love you more than that. Yeah. My line is blood, boy, oh, yeah, my blood. I love you more than that. How I feel. Everything that I'm looking for is yours. How could I ignore when I wanna be yours? But I slam the door.
I don't wanna love.
What kind of man don't understand? The difference between a penny and a dime. Must have lost the line. You and me was on the ground. Once upon a time.
Why don't you go?
Yeah, girl, why'd you
feel
like that?
Oh,
I didn't mean it like that. How you expect from me not to fight back when you scream like that?
Girl, I love you.
I'm mad at the door. I hear my blood.
I love you more than that.
Because you're all that I
want. I hurt you, girl.
All right, we're back, y'all, and time to cover a really interesting article here. We're going to get into the weeds, but I think it's necessary. Fred Kaplan wrote a fantastic article in Slate detailing what he views is the real reason why Israel and Saudi Arabia are against diplomacy with Iran. So here's his argument. He says the following, quote, "Here's the thing to keep in mind about most critics of the Iran nuclear deal that was signed Tuesday morning. Their objections have nothing to do with the details of the deal. The most diehard opponents, Benjamin Netanyahu, Saudi King Salman, and a boatload of neocons, ripped the deal long before they could possibly have browsed its 159 pages. What worries these critics most is not that Iran might enrich its uranium into an atom bomb. If that were the case, why would they so virulently oppose a deal that put off this prospect by more than a decade? No, what worries them much more deeply is that Iran might rejoin the community of nations, possibly even as a diplomatic and eventually trading partner of the United States and Europe." Ah, that's really interesting. So, in other words, he's saying that there could be a sea change in the alliances of the Middle East, and this affects business deals and prior treaties and military allegiances and things like that. And Israel and Saudi Arabia feel threatened by that, in the same way that, to make an analogy here, that your best friend in middle school might get jealous if you start hanging out with somebody new. It's the same kind of thing going on. He continues, "European leaders have said that the deal holds out hope for the reopening of broad relations with Iran, and that is precisely these critics' fear. The lifting of sanctions, which this deal will trigger in the next few years, will certainly enrich Iran. This might embolden the government's expansionist tendencies and its support of militant movements across the Middle East, or it might moderate the country's stance as the population, much of it literate and pro-Western, interacts more with the rest of the world and the reigning mullahs die off. There is some basis for this hope of transformation. How long can the mullahs sustain their cries of death to America and their claims of Western encirclement, the rationale for their oppressive domestic policies, when the country's president and foreign minister, clearly with the approval of the supreme leader, are shaking hands and signing deals with the great Satan's emissaries? The Saudi royal family is another matter. King Salman sees the entire Middle East through the prism of a grand Arab Cold War between Sunnis and Shiites. American diplomacy with Iran, in this view, amounts to an American betrayal of Saudi Arabia. What Netanyahu and King Salman want Obama to do is to wage war against Iran, or, more to the point, to fight their wars against Iran for them. That is why they so virulently oppose U.S. diplomacy with Iran, because the more we talk with Iran's leaders, the less likely we are to go to war with them. There we have it. I mean, he hit the nail on the head. In other words, what he's saying is, in the eyes of Israel and Saudi Arabia, they think, no, you can't make friends with them. You have to do our dirty work for us. And again, remember, this has nothing to do. They're going to pretend like it's some sort of principled objection to the deal because, you know, Iran is such a terribly repressive government. It's an Islamic theocracy. It's horrible. Now, that happens to be true. They are incredibly repressive domestically. They have a version of Sharia law in place. They are a theocracy. But, of course, that argument is ridiculous. Why? Because Saudi Arabia is worse. They're an even worse theocracy. They have an even stricter interpretation of Sharia law. And they're going to make an argument against the U.S. Rebuilding some sort of relationship with Iran? See, it's not about that. It was never about that. It's about the reasons that he's laying out right here, and he's 100% right. Quote, it may be that Netanyahu is overplaying his hand this time, Kaplan continues. In a speech on Tuesday, he described Iran's aggression as several times more dangerous than that of ISIS and claimed that Iran's ultimate true aim was taking over the world. Does anybody believe this? Does Netanyahu believe this? Really? Those are his words. And again, he's right to point that out. Even Netanyahu doesn't believe that. It's not about that. He's laying out the real reasons for it. And Kaplan concludes the article with this brilliant point. He says, I'm not saying Republican senators and presidential candidates should roll over and endorse this Iran deal without serious scrutiny, but maybe they should read the document, attend some informed briefings, and analyze all the players' political motives before endorsing a foreign leader's claim that their own country's president and secretary of state have surrendered their interests and capitulated to Tehran's. So that's great. That last point there, you know what he's saying? He's highlighting the irony of this all. And the irony is that as Republicans scream that Obama is capitulating to a foreign leader in Iran, they are the ones who really want to capitulate to a foreign leader, or I should say foreign leaders, the ones in Israel and Saudi Arabia. That's what the right's trying to do. No, don't do what's best for America. Because we got to do what's best for Netanyahu, and we got to do what's best for the Saudi king. So let's continue to be standoffish with Iran, and let's do a war with them, because that's what they want. So who's listening to foreign leaders here? You guys are. President Obama is actually doing what's best for the American people in doing this deal. So yet again, man, the real reason why they're against the deal has nothing to do with some sort of principled opposition and, oh, these guys are terrible and they restrict human rights and they fund global terror and all that. And you know that's not the case because that's what Saudi Arabia does, and they're screaming the loudest right along with Israel making this argument. Iran is so bad, you can't let them, you can't do any kind of deal with them whatsoever. Why? Fucking assholes got Sharia law over there, man. It's fucked up. You're beheading people for witchcraft and sorcery and atheism and drug smuggling and all types of horseshit. There are people in the Saudi government who, there's evidence they funded some of the most extreme jihadist groups around the world. You guys are going to bitch about Iran? Get the fuck out of here, man. It's got nothing to do with that. The real reasons are, as Kaplan pointed out here, and he's 100% correct. Okay. Next. Dick Cheney, oh boy, here we go. Dick Cheney went on Fox News to fearmonger over the Iran peace deal. Let's listen.
Mr. Vice President, a day that will live in infamy, your thoughts?
I can't help but just shake my head at Sean, at what we're seeing here. We've seen a repetition of the same kind of operation with respect to other issues. The one thing that really disturbed me was when he said we have, quote, stopped the proliferation of nuclear weapons. That's a lie.
No, you're lying.
Just the fact of the matter is that the situation we've got, when Iran ends up with the nuclear weapons, that is bound to lead others in the region to protect themselves and, in effect, to acquire their own capability. I think that was one of the biggest problems we had when we were in office that we were concerned about was nuclear proliferation. We'd seen the Iraqis in 81 with a nuclear reactor. The Israelis took it out. In 91, they had a second program. We took it out in Desert Storm. When we took down Saddam Hussein in 03, Gaddafi gave up his nuclear materials, and that let us wrap up AQ Khan, et cetera, et cetera. There's a long history there. What Obama has done is, in effect, sanction the acquisition by Iran of nuclear capability. It could be a few years down the road. It doesn't make any difference. It's a matter of months until we're going to see a situation where other people feel they have to defend themselves by acquiring their own capability, and that will, in fact, I think, put us closer to actual use of nuclear weapons than we've been at any time since Hiroshima and Nagasaki in World War II.
Did you hear what he said at the end there? We're now closer to use of nuclear weapons. We're the closest we've been since Hiroshima and Nagasaki in World War II. Okay, I'm not a genius or anything, but that sounds to me like he's the one that's threatening nuclear war. He's saying we're the closest to actual nuclear warfare that we've been since World War II when we did it. So wait, how can you sit there and say that it's Iran that are the ones who are being aggressive? They just signed a peace deal. They just signed a nuclear agreement wherein they said we are not going to create nukes. And then when they sign that agreement, you say, now we need to attack. Now we're even closer to using nukes than we were before. So let me get this straight. They go to you and say, we would like peace. We are going to agree to terms here that say we'll never get a nuclear weapon and we don't want a nuclear weapon. We're committing to that. It's in writing. It's an official treaty with the international community. We're saying you win. You win. You get what you want. You get exactly what you want. And your response is, I kind of want to nuke you more now. Dick, who's the bad guy here? See, the problem with Dick Cheney is that he's, in essence, the American Ayatollah. He's the American supreme leader, if you will. Where he's the one, like the Ayatollah has been this idiot in the corner saying stupid hawkish things all along while Hassan Rouhani and the foreign minister have been trying to actually get a peace deal. That Dick Cheney's our version of that. He's the crazy guy in the corner, fight him! Fuck Iranians! I don't like them! Let's nuke them! And what's hilarious is that always the people who are most hawkish blame the other side as being the aggressor. It happens with the Ayatollah, it happens with Dick Cheney. You're the one that just said we might have to do nuclear war, and you're saying, why are they so goddamn hawkish? You're the one that's hawkish! You just said we might have to do nuclear war! It's the same thing. Notice, there's been Republican politicians, Duncan Hunter, for example, said we should nuke Iran just to let them know we mean business. And in that entire segment where he spoke about that, his argument was, they're the problem. They're really hawkish, so we must nuke them. But then you're the hawkish one! What are you talking about? You're clearly more hawkish. John McCain, Iran is so evil and so bad that I am going to sing a song out loud, bomb, 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 bomb Iran. So you're the one that's hawkish. I mean, for fuck's sake, whenever they have a hawkish comment, one of their ministers or something like that, you fly, I was going to say that sentence wouldn't make any sense. You go crazy, okay? You lose it, and you're like, oh my God, oh, I want war, they're so crazy. But then you turn around and make the same kind of fucking comments, and you act like when you do it, it's not worse. It is just as bad when you do it. Dick, let me explain something to you. You lost all credibility, okay? You need to sit this one out. You're not Nostradamus. Every single prediction you thought you nailed, you got exactly wrong. I mean, for example, with Iraq, what did him and George Bush and all the neocons say? They said, we're going to be greeted as liberators. How'd that work out? The oil will pay for the war. How'd that work out? It's going to be over in a few months. How'd that work out? Every single prediction they made, there's going to be a democracy, a flourishing Jeffersonian democracy in Iraq. How'd that work out? Now ISIS has taken over vast swaths of it, and the Sunni-Shia divide is worse than ever. Every prediction you made was wrong, and now you expect us to take you seriously when you want to make more predictions. And understand, most of that was just flat-out lies. It was flat-out lies. He's like, oh, yeah, this makes Iran get closer to a nuclear weapon, and now they're going to have it in a few months. Except that's wrong, because before the deal, they had the capability to, if they chose, create a nuclear weapon, and it would have taken a few months in order to get to that point. Now, because of the deal, it was a few months, now it's 10 years. So they got rid of all of their uranium that was enriched to a higher point. Now there's a cap on it where I think it's 3.67 or something like that. And under that level means they can only enrich uranium for scientific reasons and for power for their power grid, which, by the way, they're already allowed to do under international law. So as a result of this deal, it is not a few months until they can create a bomb if they wanted to. It's 10 years now. So the deal achieved something that you should be celebrating, but you're not celebrating, and you're just lying about it. He made it seem like, well, now we know Iran's going to get a bomb. But the deal says the opposite. In fact, let me quote you from the deal. Under the preamble and general provisions, on page 3 of the deal, so you don't even need to, you know, read all the way into page 97. We're talking about page 3 of the deal. The first line on page 3 says, quote, Iran reaffirms that under no circumstances will Iran ever seek, develop, or acquire any nuclear weapons. So you're just wrong. You're lying. It says in the deal that they're not going to get it, and you go out there and say they're going to get it. Why should I trust you? I see the deal, and I see that they signed it. I see the international community is on board with it. Why the fuck would I trust you when you've been wrong about everything over them? Now, is it a fair point to say, well, you know, I don't trust them? That's a fine point to make. But understand the deal is not based on trust. It's based on IAEA verification. And as always with the Republicans, they don't understand that Iran shouldn't trust us either. They act like, well, come on now. You have to grandfather in the fact that we should be trusted because we're America. We're obviously trustworthy. They're like, don't worry about that question. But I don't trust them. Well, they shouldn't trust us either, jackass. We overthrew their government in 1953 in a CIA coup. We've been fucking with their internal affairs forever. The whole reason why we did overthrow their government in the early 1950s is because Mohammad Mossadegh, democratically elected leader of Iran, wanted to nationalize the oil industry and actually give some wealth back to the people of Iran so they can have a flourishing middle class. Western oil companies in the UK and the US said, can't allow that, sorry. Toppled in, put in the Shah. The Shah allowed us to continue to steal the oil. So this idea of, oh, they're pure evil, and they're wrong, and they're bad, and we're pure good, and we might have to nuke them to prove that we're the good people. Really? A second grader can see through that logic. We're such great people that we should nuke a bunch of innocent people in Iran. Fuck off. You've been wrong all along, and you're going to continue to be wrong. It's unbelievable, man. They sign a peace deal, and Dick Cheney acts like we should nuke them now. Okay. Let's move on. I got to go to Glenn Beck on the same issue. Glenn Beck did a rambling Facebook post in response to the new peace deal with Iran. So let's try our best to go through this here and not laugh at him. So you're going to realize how confused he is and how little he knows about the Middle East. He says the following, quote, "For years I have warned the world against turning a blind eye to those who run Iran. They are beyond radical Islamists. They, like ISIS, are psychotic Islamists." So already you're comparing the Iranian regime to ISIS, except there's one problem with that. Iran is Shia. They are fighting ISIS, who are fundamentalist Sunnis. They're Salafists. So they are fighting them. They are against them. They are more moderate than them. Of course, they have tremendous internal problems, and they are to a certain extent a theocracy and governed by a form of Sharia law. I'm against all that. But they are better than ISIS, and they are significantly more moderate than ISIS, and they're fighting ISIS. But we already have, we're just a few lines in, he's already like, ISIS, Iran, what's the fucking difference? He continues. When I predicted the rise of the caliphate, those who had not done their homework on what was really happening in the Middle East, ironic, spent their time mocking me. Once again, I warned the American people and the people of the world again, okay, kind of repeated yourself there, this particular strain of Islamists, like ISIS, believe they can hasten the return of the Promised One and usher in the literal end times. No one in their right mind would sign treaties with a Christian country that believed these things. Remember, it does not require you to believe it, just that you fully understand that they believe it. Oh, yes, I see. So they're so fucking crazy for literally believing in end times that you can't do business with them, because why would you do any kind of business with somebody who's dumb enough to believe end times? That's a good point, Glenn.
I warn you, we are in very dangerous times. We are living in biblical times. I told my staff a long time ago, when you hear me start talking about God, you'll know we're at a different DEFCON level. When you start hearing me use the words Jesus Christ on the air, because I know what it does to my popularity, I know what it does, and I know how it makes you into a crazy Christian kook. And I said, we will be at a much different DEFCON level when I start saying Jesus Christ and quoting the Bible. If you ever hear me mention the Book of Mormon on the air, we are at the end.
By your own logic, nobody should do business with you. By your own logic. I believe in end times, fucking crazy people. Who could do business with them? They're so irrational. You're irrational. You're the one that's screaming about end times. And by the way, everybody knows the story now of George W. Bush talking to top French officials in the government, and he said that the Iraq war was done because he thought the biblical demons of Gog and Magog were coming back to the region. So by your own logic, nobody should do any business, not only with you, but with the United States of America, when we have crazy evangelical leaders, as we've had in the past. So again, that's the thing, is they're not objective. They don't hold themselves to the same standards they hold other people. In Glenn Beck's mind, our religious lunatics are right. Their religious lunatics are wrong and dangerous. No, I'm of the belief that all religious lunatics are wrong and dangerous. He's not done yet, though. He's going to continue to compare Iran to ISIS. Quote, what this president has done will be remembered as something far worse than Neville Chamberlain, who, of course, gave away territory to Hitler. It will only be a matter of time before millions cry out his name in despair and contempt. A Holocaust, perhaps bigger than the last, where millions of Christians and even Muslims who are not Muslim enough will die at the hands of the Islamic State. Notice what he did there. Total bait and switch. So he starts out by talking about how, yeah, Iran, they're fucked up. They're kind of like ISIS. And then he kind of brings it up again later in the article. And then by the end, he just does a bait and switch and says, millions of Christians and even Muslims who are not Muslim enough will die at the hands of the Islamic State. What the fuck does that have to do with Iran? Iran is fighting those people. Iran is fighting those people. Iran is fighting those people. Need I repeat myself? Now, again, man, this is in no way, shape, or form a defense of the domestic policies of Iran. The Ayatollah is a crazy person. The Ayatollah is a fundamentalist. The policies that they implement against their own people are fucked up. But you have to understand that they are a bulwark in the region against ISIS, and they're obviously significantly more reasonable than ISIS. The Shias have no dreams of a global caliphate wherein they're the leaders. That's just not true. That doesn't exist. Now, the Salafists and ISIS and the Sunni fundamentalists, they do have those goals. They do have those dreams. Okay? And again, Iran is fighting them. But in Glenn Beck's mind, they're Muslims. They're all the same. So for me to oppose a peace deal with Iran to stop them from getting a nuke, I mean, that's me being tough on ISIS. Except that's not you being tough on ISIS. What you're doing is you're tough on the people who are fighting ISIS. And you, ironically, are actually making it easier for them to get a nuke. because you don't want to take part in this deal. You don't want to have IAEA verification. You don't want to get them to sign on with an international treaty that says we're not going to get any nuclear weapons ever. So you're actually making it much easier for them to say, fuck the entire system. I don't want to do a deal with anybody. Now we actually are going to go build some nukes. And this is just a perfect metaphor for Glenn Beck and the ultra-right in a nutshell. The entire time, they're so convinced that they're nailing it, and they're so sure that they're acting right, but in reality, they're making every single thing worse. Under Glenn Beck's ideal scenario, ISIS would become more powerful, and Iran would be much more likely to build a bomb. Well done. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I got Bill O'Reilly goes after some liberal outlets in a hilariously dumb way, and we have Pastor Manning. He will be talking about the gay demon semen. Demon semen. I like the way that sounds. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Next door when her parents went out, she'd phone say, hey boy, come on right around. So I knocked at the door, he was standing with a bottle of red wine ready to pour, just in a long black satin laced to the floor. So I went in and we sat down, stopped kissing, caressing, told me about jacuzzi, sounded interesting. So we jumped right in, all calls I got it to answer phone. I mean, her parents were kind of cool, but they were the fine line between me and you. We were just doing things and people in love do. Parents trying to find out what we were. Why were you creeping down late night? Turning our seats to the shadows moving in your bedroom. Now you're dressed in black, when I left you were dressed in white. Can you feel me? She'd ask me to come out, I'd say, hey girl, come right around. So she knocked at the door, I was standing with the keys in my hand to the 4x4, jumped in my ride, chipping and nobody saw. The club we went in, we got down, bow to the rhythm. So it was early morning, thought we better be leaving. So I gave you my jacket for you to hold, told you to wear it cause you felt cold. I mean, I didn't mean to break the rules. I weren't trying to pray money that's for fools. We were just doing things young people in love do. Parents trying to find out what we were. Baby, why can't you keep your promises? No more, soon we'll be home by 12, controlling in Apple. I'll wear the girls, we're leaving with the boy next door. Can you feel me?
All right, welcome back, bitches. We're going to get off the Iran thing now. Covered long enough, wouldn't you say? We got to go to Bill O'Reilly. So Bill O'Reilly is going to continue to try and push bad policies after the murder of a woman named Kate Steinle by an undocumented immigrant. So let's listen to his rant, and then I'll break it down.
San Francisco crew is aided by a compliant media. As you may know, we have proposed Kate's Law, new federal legislation that would mandate any felon who's deported and comes back receives a mandatory 5-year prison term, period. That's opposed by the ACLU, the New York Times, and other uber-liberal left media. Again, it gets worse. The hate site Salon bannered this headline. Bill O'Reilly sends the vile Jesse Waters to grandstand in San Francisco over Kate Steinle's murder. The hate site Media Matters bannered this. Fox figures lead the charge praising Trump's immigrant smears for igniting national immigration debate. Then liberal newspapers like the San Jose Mercury News spread the propaganda. Quote from that paper. Bill O'Reilly, the murder of Kate Steinle proves Donald Trump is right about Mexicans. Of course, I never said that. The San Jose Mercury News fabricated it, mimicking a hate website. So here's a suggestion for the Mercury News, Yahoo News, and others that print that garbage. You wouldn't use anything from Stormfront, another hate website, would you? So why are you using stuff from Salon, which is just as ugly? Why are you legitimizing rank propaganda? You should be ashamed of yourselves.
You should be ashamed of yourself. I'm the one that knows a thing or two about propaganda, because I do it every day. What, did I say that out loud? I didn't mean to say that out loud. That was supposed to be in my head, that part. Calm down, son. The thing that's annoying about Bill O'Reilly is he gets on his high horse and pretends like he's on some sort of moral crusade. The entire time he's dead wrong on the substance of the issue. You really just compared Media Matters and Salon.com to Stormfront. Do you guys know what Stormfront is? It's a white nationalist, white supremacist, neo-Nazi, KKK website. You just compared Salon and Media Matters to Stormfront. Now, are those websites perfect? Absolutely not. I mean, in my opinion, I think Salon sometimes goes a little too far left, and they get a little too social justice warrior-y, where everything is racist or sexist or something like that. And Media Matters sometimes I think is a little too rah-rah Democratic Party, and they don't call out Hillary Clinton, for example, when she's super corrupt or she does something wrong, because they kind of are playing for Team Democrat. But with that being said, with all the flaws taken into account of Media Matters and Salon, they in no way are as bad as Stormfront. False equivalence to the Max here. That's exactly what he's trying to do. Well, come on. We have some crazy websites on the right, like Stormfront, and we have some crazy websites on the left, like Media Matters and Salon. No. First of all, virtually all the websites on the right are crazy. Let's get that out there now. WorldNet Daily, Daily Caller, they simply make shit up. They make shit up all the time, have no facts to back their shit up. So they're the problem on the right. Stormfront is a fucking terrorist website. That's how I would describe that. That's what they're in favor of. Openly advocating hatred and segregation and white supremacy and all that stuff. To compare fucking Media Matters and Salon to basically a terrorist website, no, Bill. You're the problem here. You're the problem. Anytime any website ever says anything that disagrees with you, they must be nefarious and they must be like terrorist white supremacists. They're equivalent to them. My ass, man. You know what it is? He's had a vendetta against these sites forever. And most recently he's been super angry because Mother Jones was one, Media Matters was another. They continued breaking stories about Bill O'Reilly's lies. Remember, it wasn't that long ago, Bill O'Reilly, a litany of Bill O'Reilly lies came out, proven lies. It was after the Brian Williams thing. So there was, oh my God, Brian Williams lied, what a horrible person, gotta fire him. Bill O'Reilly told roughly 20 fucking lies. Everybody just sits back and lets him stay on TV. Now fuck that. If you're gonna go after Brian Williams, of course you go after O'Reilly. O'Reilly should be fired 20 times over for the shit he said. I saw El Salvadorian nuns get shot, I was there. Really? Then why is it that we have evidence, we have proof that, in fact, you showed up a year fucking later, and your excuse was the best? Did I say I saw them get shot in the head? I meant that I saw pictures of them getting shot in the head. Yeah, and I saw Hurricane Katrina. It was on Google Images, but fuck, I saw it. Who are you to judge me? That's the fucking tap dance you go into. I was in a war zone in the Falklands, except you weren't. We know you weren't. Everybody said you weren't. Everybody who was your coworker at the time says you're full of fucking shit. And the list goes on and on. How many lies can you tell? I witnessed a guy who was involved with the JFK assassination kill himself. I was knocking on his door when it happened. Really? Then why is it we have a fucking phone call of you calling your other reporter friend saying, I'm going to hop on a plane now, after the guy already killed himself. I'm going to hop on a plane. I'll be there tomorrow. You showed up a day later and you just make up the story. I was there. Really? Why aren't you mentioning the police report? Why have you not mentioned this in the past before? Why do you make shit up when we can prove that you weren't there? See, the thing is, he's a vicious liar, and he tears down other people and their reputations. So whenever anybody points out facts about him and his show, he thinks that they're the ones that are doing the smearing. No, Bill, that's you. Look in the fucking mirror. And then finally, to the substance of this. So this poor woman, Kate Steinle, was murdered by an undocumented immigrant. Now, that undocumented immigrant had been deported multiple times. And the immigrant came back in, killed Kate Steinle, and now the right is using this to advocate for policies that discriminate against all undocumented immigrants. All 11 million of them. You know, you hear cries, deport them all, do this, do that. So the reason why the left is objecting is not because, what, they dislike Kate Steinle? They were for the murder of Kate Steinle? Is that really what you fucking think? No, what they're saying is, hey, don't punish all the 11 million undocumented immigrants because of the wrong actions of one undocumented immigrant. And I haven't heard from one person on the left who didn't say that this undocumented immigrant shouldn't have been deported again. The problem is that they didn't catch him soon enough. I'm sure they were trying. They already deported him multiple times, but they just didn't catch him soon enough. Okay, but in Bill O'Reilly's mind, what's his solution? His solution is even stupid. He's like, well, we should, if an undocumented immigrant gets deported and they come back in the country, well, then they get put in jail for 5 years. Yeah, but wait a second. So let's apply that logic to what happened in this case. The guy could have just gotten out of jail in 5 years and then went and murdered somebody 5 years later. You didn't solve the fucking problem. And also, why would you want to waste, you know, tax dollars to put people who aren't even citizens in our own jails? And we have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to keep them in jail? I thought you were a fiscal conservative. Doesn't make any sense. No, the right answer is to deport any undocumented immigrant that's guilty of a serious crime. Yes. Deport that person, for sure, and that was the reasoning, I'm sure, that went into deporting this person in the first place. So, yeah, and you're not going to find anybody that disagrees with that. But, see, the thing is, they can't sensationalize it based on the facts, so what do? They have to use it to try to smear all undocumented immigrants and to push for policies that are discriminatory in other ways or just bad ideas like Bill O'Reilly is doing right here. So, Bill, let me break it down for you nice and simple. When people disagree with you and they point out your bullshit, no, they're not like Stormfront. They're actually speaking facts and telling the truth, and you're angry because you can't handle it. Okay. Let's go to a Confederate flag issue here. It made its way back into the news. Representative Ted Olson is a Republican from Texas, and he called into a conservative talk show and demanded that Democrats apologize for the Confederate flag or shut up about it.
Saw what they really want here on the House floor yesterday. I mean, there's been all sorts of issues and discussions and outrage about the Confederate flag in South Carolina. Stan, the Democrats have no standing whatsoever to talk about that flag because that was the flag of their party during the Civil War. That was their battle flag, not our battle flag. Our battle flag was the Stars and Stripes with President Lincoln. They have no credibility. Shut up. Apologize.
Amen.
Now.
Amen. Amen to that. And that was just to distract. And I don't, like I said, I don't know if the media was part of it intentionally. The whole Confederate flag story is a fake story.
What does that mean? The whole Confederate flag story is a fake story. So the Confederate flag doesn't exist? It's not real? people aren't actually upset by it. It doesn't actually represent racism and a fight against desegregation and slavery. That's not a fake story. It's absolutely a real story. The flag represents hateful shit, and people are pissed off about it because a guy did terrorism in Charleston and killed 9 black people, and he's got pictures posing with the Confederate flag really proud of it. The fuck are you talking about? It's a fake issue. It's a real issue. Of course it's a real issue. But, if, you know, it's something that he personally happens to like, and it represents his own heritage and what his beliefs are, well, then it's a fake issue because you can't actually be attacking the thing that I hold so dearly because the thing I hold so dearly must be right. It must be proper. It must be correct. Well, no, it's not correct. It is a symbol of hate. It is a horrific flag. And, of course, it should come down on public land. Now, did you notice the other point? This is the most tired conservative argument that we hear every single year now. They say, well, blame the Democrats for the Confederate flag because that was their flag. So, gotcha. We were the party of Lincoln. Aha. Seriously? Either this person is totally ignorant of history or they're stupid. It's one or the other. There's no other option. Or I guess you could say just lying and knows the real answer but is misleading. Okay, what's the reality about that? The party switched, you idiot! Think about what you just said. You guys represent the party of the North? You guys represent Lincoln and the North, the Union? No, you don't. The Confederate flag literally is in the South. It represents the South. It represents the Confederacy. Again, quite literally. But see, he's playing the word association game. Well, Lincoln was a Republican and he freed the slaves, so aha. Yeah, but at that time, the Republicans were the liberal party. The Democrats were the conservative party. You do know what happened, by the way, in the 1960s when Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. You do know that there's a famous moment where he says the Democratic Party just lost the South for a generation because he knows that the Southern Democrats, the Dixiecrats, were super racist, and the second he signed those bills, all those Dixiecrats were going to abandon the Democratic Party, and they're going to run to the Republican Party. So all the racists in the South ran into the arms of the Republican Party where they said, oh, we love you and we welcome you. So there was a sea change in American political affiliation where the parties flipped. It used to be liberal Republicans, then it became conservative Republicans, and it used to be conservative Democrats, then it became liberal Democrats. And the entire time, here's how you know it's horseshit, because if you take away all the political affiliation horseshit, what's another way to view this? North versus South. The entire time, the North was the one that was more anti-slavery, more pro-civil rights, more open-minded, more tolerant. The entire time, the South, the culture in the South, not that there weren't good individuals in the South, but the culture in the South was more bigoted, more anti-black, more pro-segregation, more pro-slavery. And for you to make the argument, well, the flag represents the Democrats, that's what it represents. What you're doing is you're disregarding the fact that all those people that at the time called themselves Dixiecrats, what happened to them since then? Where did they go, big guy? Did they vote for Barack Obama? Is that who they voted for? You sure you want to make that argument? No, you're not going to make that argument because you know that's bullshit because you know damn well which party they're voting for. It's the Republicans. It's your party. So point the finger at yourself. All right, next. Oh, let's go to David Manning. Oh, yes, what you've all been waiting for. The always hilarious conservative Christian host, Pastor David Manning, has a dire warning for gay people or people thinking about being gay. Let's watch.
I want to ask you if you have ever been injected with the sodomite demon. Have you ever had that demon injected in you? Now, I tell women, and I preach this all the time in our church, I say, you know, if you have sexual intercourse with a man and he plants his semen inside of you, that semen, whether it makes you pregnant or not, enters into your blood system. Your womb is a place for the receptacle, and it goes into your blood system. And whatever he has in his blood is in your blood. And for instance, if he has a disease in his blood, through his semen, and the semen is the cream of the blood. Semen is produced by the blood. It is the cream. It is the power. It is the cream of blood. That's just no other way to say it. It isn't blood itself. It is even more powerful than blood. It can actually produce life, semen. But if your blood, if a man puts his semen in you, I teach women, that, and if it's disease, you're going to get that disease. You've got whatever that is, whether it's AIDS or syphilis or one of these other diseases, you're going to get it because it's going to go right into your blood system, right through your vagina, right through your womb. If a man injects himself in you, if a man injects himself in another man and injects his semen into him and he's crazy, then that's going to get in his blood as well. And if demons are in him, then those demons, you're going to get penetrated by demons. You're going to get penetrated by demons. You know, even the kissing of someone who has demons in their blood, that saliva can give you a disease. I posted up on our announcement board that sodomy is metastasized here in Harlem, and people in restaurants and our dates need to be very, very careful. Why am I saying all of this? I'm saying this to say to you, perhaps you first got introduced to these demons in your life, sodomy, when you had no defense.
And you couldn't help it. You saw that there was a good-looking man, and you said to yourself, oh, I bet he's got some nice semen demons. I'd like to see the semen demons squirt out of his head of his penis like this. Oh, God, you're so sad, David Manning. You're so sad. No, did you catch it? At the very beginning, he's asking, like, I want to talk to you, I guess, callers in his radio show or whatever. Have you been inflicted or injected with the semen, the devil semen, the demon semen? So it's like he's inquiring. He's like, oh, I really want to hear about this demon semen because it's so hot. I mean, I'm against it because the devil's wrong. The devil's bad. Now, we already know, we covered the story. The Young Turks, the main channel, they did an interview with David Manning, and Cenk and Anna got him to admit, like, oh, yes, I've been tempted, for sure. I was in jail. When I was in jail, I was tempted to fuck men. I was very interested in it, but I didn't give in to that temptation. But I felt it. Oh, it was there. I felt it. It was so strong. No, the guy doesn't get it. Like, dude, that means you're gay. That means you're at least bisexual. Okay? That is what it means. Maybe you're physically, sexually attracted to women as well. That would mean you're bisexual. But if you're attracted to men in any way, shape, or form in a sexual way, and you are, you admitted it, that means you're at least bisexual or you're just gay. But he doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. See, that's why he's so frustrated and he always talks about this issue of gay people, gay marriage, gay sex, and all that stuff. Because he's struggling with it himself, and he's fighting off those temptations himself because he really thinks it's wrong. So he's fighting off those temptations. And so, as Dan Savage puts it, he's externalizing an internal struggle, where he's saying, since I'm fighting with this, I am just going to assume that everybody else is struggling with it. All other guys are struggling with it. We all want to suck a dick every once in a while. So let's talk about how we need to fight that urge. But the reality is the majority of men are not feeling like that. Sorry, David, man. It's you. It's you. You're the one who's struggling with it, and you just can't bring yourself to be true to who you are and to say, okay, look, man, I want to put baby oil all over my body and roll around with Channing Tatum. I can't help it. That's what I want. I want his demon semen. You see, the semen is the cream of the blood. And if a man's crazy and he ejaculates into you, that means he can ejaculate the crazy into you because the crazy gets in the blood because it's the cream of the blood. The fuck? Scientists were listening to that going, somebody get me a gun. I must kill myself now. This is how far we've come? This is what people believe? The cream of the blood is the cream. And then you also got the pre-cum is like the... It's the 1% milk of the blood is what I think it is. And you can ejaculate demons into other people. Think about the multiple layers of stupid that is. Because he's assuming like a trillion things to make that one dumb comment. So obviously demons are real, obviously Christianity is true, and obviously demons are in your semen, and you ejaculate the demon semen into another person, and it transfers. It's not like the other person has demon antibodies that can fight off the demon semen. Once the demon semen gets into you, fuck, man, you caught the gay demon semen AIDS, or whatever the fuck it's called. Oh, you're so sad, man. He's living a life in the year 2015 based on biblical superstition and hatred and bigotry and horseshit. It's sad to watch. It's sad to watch because, everything you're saying conflicts with reality, conflicts with science, conflicts with common sense, and all you are is a punchline for people like me, who aren't even funny. That's not even what I do. I'm not a comedian. But you're such a caricature that even I can make fun of you, and I talk about the demon semen, and it's funny because it's just that dumb. Okay. Don't catch the demon semen, guys. Stay away from the demon semen. All right, let's go to a less crazy person, but still a person who would ruin the country given the opportunity. Representative Robert Pittenger, a Republican of North Carolina, appeared last week at the Celebrate America Revival meeting in Washington, D.C. It's an evangelical Christian meeting, and his comments were disturbing.
The most important message that needs to be heard in this city is the gospel and love of Christ. That transforms lives. You know, we've seen some court rulings that have unsettled us, caused us great pain in our heart for our country. I don't hold fault with those who believe different than me. They just don't know my Savior. They don't know the one who loved me and gave himself for me. And that's my mission. That's my primary mission as a member of Congress. Yes, to serve my constituents, to serve my region and my state and my country. But we're here as emissaries for Christ. The man across the street who lives in that real big white house, God loves him. God is working in his heart because we're praying for him. He would know the love of Christ. It transforms everything. Transforms everything we do and think and believe. I don't care what issue that we work on in public policy and legislation, it all comes down to the reality of Christ.
Yeah, that's unacceptable. That guy should step down. You can't do that. You can't do that. You're allowed to be personally as religious as you want to be in America, of course. You can believe whatever the fuck you want to believe. But you cannot bring your religious beliefs and ideas into the public square and try to implement them into law. You can't do that. That's the exact opposite of what the government in America was founded on. We were the first secular nation in the world where we said there's a separation of church and state. The government cannot establish a religion. There's going to be no religious test for office. And we're going to be ruled not by somebody's interpretation of their own God, but we're going to be ruled by democracy and logic and conversation, and we try to find the right answer empirically based on what's happening in this world. We're not going to bring in supernatural nonsense into the conversation. He's saying the exact opposite. And so condescending. He's like, I don't blame people who don't believe as I do. Oh, well, thank you. So kind. You don't blame me. But they don't know my Savior, he says. Well, what about you not knowing other people's Savior? Or you not knowing what other people believe if they don't believe in a Savior? How about that? If a Muslim says that to you, would you say, that's cool? Look, I know, okay, so you don't know Allah because you believe in a different religion, but you just haven't met my Savior, the great Allah, and the religion of Islam. Would you respond to that by saying, oh, well, I guess the person's right and I better sit down and listen? No. But when it's you talking, that is what you believe. Well, I don't fault them for not believing what I do, but they haven't graduated to my level yet. They don't know my savior. Maybe it's all in your fucking head. Have you ever thought of that? And he says, the number one mission, my main job, is to be an emissary for Christ. So you're saying, I would like to make America the Christian version of Saudi Arabia. I would like biblical law to rule us all, and specifically, I would like my interpretation of biblical law to rule us all. And here's why this is so dangerous. Insofar as somebody actually believes what they're saying when they talk about that, this is where fascism grows out of. Like, fascism can grow out of this kind of theocratic thinking. Because if you truly believe that anything you do, by definition, is backed by God, the Almighty, who's omnipotent, well, then you don't tolerate any dissent whatsoever. You don't take any counter opinions into consideration. You don't really give a shit about the democratic will of the people, because you know at the end of the day, whatever I say goes, because I got my God behind me and I really believe that. Profoundly dangerous, and it's the opposite of what America was founded on. And I'm sorry, but a guy like this, who's so open about the fact that he is the Christian Taliban, you should step down, because you totally missed the point of the country. And if people like you had your way, America would not be nearly as free a nation. It would be a much worse nation, and very few people would really want to live here. Okay. Vice News and Reuters is reporting on a heartbreaking story that sounds like it happened in the year 6. It's a really primitive story. They say, quote, a mob hacked a family to death in a village in the eastern Indian state of Odisha on Monday, having suspected its members of sorcery and witchcraft that was making children sick. The family was asleep in their mud hut in Lahanda, a rural tribal community, when attackers armed with axes entered their home and stabbed both parents and their 6 children as they slept. The authorities discovered a gruesome scene at the home: hacked bodies, pools of blood, a discarded axe, and a young boy, 8 years old, who was still alive amid the carnage. The police are searching for the perpetrators, who they believe are related to the victims. So there are actually about 150 cases every year of witch lynchings in India. 150 cases. And one of the things that they do, the article in Vice News goes on to explain, is they'll pull out the teeth of people who they think are witches. They'll pull out all their teeth, already torture, already excruciatingly painful. I don't know how the people don't even pass out during that. I mean, the horrendous nature of that and the abuse. And then they'll force them to eat shit. They'll make them eat excrement after they pull out all their teeth. Wow. And the irony of the first segment here, which I read for you guys, think about that. They go, oh my God, our children are in pain, our children are sick, so let's go hack other kids to death. You're concerned about the health and well-being of kids, so you go and kill kids. That would also be affecting the health and well-being of kids, but no, see, that's the thing. We're dealing with, there's two main problems here. Extreme poverty and lack of education, you put that in, you know, one area. And then the other one is belief. The fact that because of the extreme poverty and because of the lack of education, people embrace superstition. They embrace things that are untrue because they don't know any better, and they're willing to act on those ignorant beliefs, and this is the result here. It's totally unacceptable, man. It's a horrendous situation. I can't believe this exists in 2015. And the answer really is, you know, the Indian government has to get in there and do investment and do education and not fuck around and really buckle down and try to fix that, fix the extreme poverty, fix the lack of education. And then, yes, you teach them, no, you don't, witches are not real, sorcery is not real, what you're doing here is not true, you're just murdering people and perhaps you're the bad guy. You have to get this into their head, because it's just unacceptable that 150 people die every year in India alone because they think they're witches. Unacceptable. It needs to be addressed. All right, guys, I'm out of time. Love you. Kisses, smooches. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Peace.